take the scenic drive to the Guitar Oasis Cool in Jefferson County. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, jeffsguitar.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like S&R Remodeling and our friends at St. Vincent de Paul. State Representative Lisa Subak with us from the 78th District. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sly. Glad to be here.
Before we dive into Wisconsin politics, let's talk about what happened in Alabama the other day. If you had told me a year ago that a pro-choice Democrat would be holding the seat of Jefferson Beauregard Sessions, you probably would have thought I was a little cuckoo if I'd told you that was going to happen.
Absolutely. I think that, what we saw was pretty amazing.
He took a lot of heat for, Doug Jones took a lot of heat for standing up for reproductive rights. So I'm going to play a clip from Meet the Press. This is Jones with Chuck Todd earlier this year.
Let me ask you an abortion. What are the limitations that you believe should be in the law when it comes to an abortion?
Well, look, I am a firm believer that a woman should have the freedom to choose what happens to her own body. And I'm going to stand up for that, and I'm going to make sure that that continues to happen. I want to make sure that as we go forward, people have access to contraception, they have access to the abortion that they might need. If that's what they choose to do, I think that that's going to be an issue that we can work with and talk to people about from both sides of the aisle. It's one of those.
But you wouldn't legislate, so you wouldn't be in favor of legislation that said ban abortion after 20 weeks or something like that?
Now, I'm not in favor of anything that is going to infringe on a woman's right and her freedom to choose. That's just the position that I've had for many years. It's the position I continue to have. But when those people, I want to make sure people understand that once a baby is born, I'm going to be there for that child. That's where I become a right to lifer.
I love that answer.
But
I bet his political consultant was probably pulling his hair out.
In Alabama, that might be a tough sell, though I think that Doug Jones is on to something there, because despite sort of the political realm where this is such a polarized issue, most people across the country do believe that government should not interfere with your health care decisions, and that, you know, a woman and her doctor should be able to make these reproductive health decisions without interference from politicians. You know, people get that we as politicians shouldn't be playing doctors. So, you know, while there may have been a consultant out there who is squirming thinking this is Alabama, on the other hand, you know, when you start talking the average everyday person, wherever you are in the country, and you say, you know, should your politician be in your doctor's office? They say no. You know, this is about medical care. It's what doctors do. It's not what politicians do.
Well, a little context here. Doug Jones, former U.S. attorney, not only put away the Klan, the two men that had not been convicted for the Birmingham bombing in 1963, but Doug Jones also put away people responsible for bombing abortion clinics in much more recent history. Eric Rudolph, of course, went on the run. I suspect that had a big impact on how he answered that question.
Certainly. And I mean, you know, again, you're talking about he put away people who bombed clinics where doctors were working and women were seeking care. And I mean, how horrific is that?
As horrific as blowing up a church where little girls
absolutely
were
attending, right? Absolutely.
And, you know, it's an interesting dynamic. A couple days ago before the election, Peggy Noonan and Chris Matthews and all the pundits, they were trashing Doug Jones for that answer. They were saying, he's even for late-term abortion. Like, Doug Jones runs around encouraging women to have late-term abortions. How do you, and I'm sure you think about this a lot, how do people running for political office answer that question regarding abortion after 20 weeks?
You know, abortion after 20 weeks is so rare. And in most instances, when a woman is seeking an abortion that late in pregnancy, it is often a wanted pregnancy that has gone horribly wrong. And either, you know, the woman's health or her life is in danger, or the pregnancy really can't be carried to term due to problems within, you know, due to problems physically with the fetus itself, or, as I said, you know, the woman's health or life is in danger. And so I think most people understand that this is about being compassionate. You know, a woman who has a pregnancy.
Do you think most people understand that? I don't think a lot of people do understand that. You know, the anti-abortion forces were still running ads against Russ Feingold in 2016. That issue was almost 20 years old. My God, they had a picture of a naked, they showed the picture of a naked baby on television and were running them in the Green Bay market. And from what I've heard, some of the research, those ads had an impact.
Right. And, you know, so I think
it was a disgusting ad.
Yeah, the real issue here, though, is this is about the freedom to make your own health care decisions.
Well, hey, listen, you know my background. My mother was one of the first people with Planned Parenthood in the state. You know, she would have put my head in a bowling bag if I'd ever
Right. Well, and you know, those ads are horrific, but the problem is the ads aren't indicative of the reality. You know, the reality is that women who seek abortions after 20 weeks typically are either in danger themselves. You know, folks who are diagnosed with cancer and they're faced with this horrible decision of, do I try to carry this pregnancy to term, a pregnancy that I wanted, or do I terminate the pregnancy so I can begin to treat my cancer? You know, women who go in for testing, you know, and at the end of their second trimester and find out that there is something horribly wrong with the fetus, that it won't make it to childbirth, and they want to terminate the pregnancy rather than having to continue to carry until they miscarry.
Okay, so maybe the way to answer that question, you know, and Doug, you know that the Republicans, especially if they continue to control the Senate, they're going to deliberately put stuff up that he's going to have to vote on, right? You know how that goes.
Right, of course.
Maybe the way to answer that for people that are running in conservative states like that is what you just did by citing an example.
Of course, because ads, the ads they put on TV are these, like, horrific, you know, images, and they're not representative of what really happens. Nobody holds them accountable. But what we need to be talking about is how this affects real people, because all of us have somebody we know, whether it's somebody in our family, somebody with whom we work, somebody who's a neighbor, who has faced a healthcare crisis during pregnancy. And in some cases, the only way to preserve your health or your life is to terminate the pregnancy. And I think that, you know, we all become more compassionate when we think about how these aren't decisions that happen, you know, just in a political realm and then, you know, go off into the ether. These are decisions that we make in the political realm that affect people's lives.
Well, believe it or not, I think there are some cynical politicians that don't give a darn hoot about what you just said.
Well, and unfortunately, you are probably right, but that's where we need to start changing who we elect, and we need to elect more politicians like Doug Jones and fewer Roy Moore.
You know what's great about Doug Jones? He's not just good on reproductive rights or civil rights. Doug Jones is a fighter for workers and unions. His father was a steel worker, and he's great about collective bargaining and organizing. You know, he's the whole package.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and he was elected in Alabama.
He was elected in Alabama. And because of Roy Moore and Donald Trump, they found a way to motivate people to get out and vote. That obviously, Donald Trump going down there and going to Pensacola and having that hideous rally, you know, I think that clearly worked in the opposite direction as the intended purpose.
Absolutely. You know, I think that while Donald Trump rode in on some strange wave of feeling here in America, I think that people have realized very quickly that Donald Trump is toxic. He's toxic for our country.
But he's also betrayed the working people that he promised to help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, when you think about who else is associated with Donald Trump, we have Scott Walker right here in Wisconsin. Scott Walker, our governor, who wants to make himself, you know, Donald Trump's right-hand man. And, you know, I think that what's interesting is we see how toxic Donald Trump is because he's doing horrible things for our country. And who is standing behind him? It wasn't just Roy Moore who was, you know, marching lockstep with Donald Trump. It's also Scott Walker, our governor here, who is up for re-election in 2018. And I hope that, you know, we're able to defeat him in the same way that Doug Jones' road to victory here.
Let's talk about what's happening in Wisconsin in this upcoming year, 2018. Lisa Subek with us. It's liesoffice.com. You have endorsed Dana Walks, as have I. I really like Dana. He's a great legislator from Eau Claire.
I always knew you had good taste.
We're not always on the same candidate page, but usually.
Yes, this is true.
So, you know, especially Dane County races, those are always a little dicey, aren't they?
Absolutely. But we all come out on the same side in the end.
You recently were on Channel 27, and in an interview you said that, you know, one of the things that we should do to prevent the toxic atmosphere of men mistreating women in general, obviously it can work the other way around, but it is to elect more women. And yet, in this race, there are two women running, and you have picked Dana Walks. Why?
You know, Dana Walks is one of my colleagues in the state legislature. I've worked closely with him. He has stood up for what is right again and again and again. And whether we are talking about women's health and, you know, harassment in the workplace, a good example, where Dana Walks has stood up and, said, hey, we need to end this. But he has also stood up on other issues that matter a lot to me, Sly. You know, he has stood up for working people. Dana Walks is from Eau Claire, and he has stood up for the people of his area, but also the surrounding areas when it comes to our environment, when it comes to our farmers, when it comes to our more rural areas. You know, Dana's there on the right side again and again and again. And, you know, I think he's got what it takes not only to lead our state, but he's got what it takes to begin to undo all of the damage that Scott Walker has done over the last 7 years, and I look forward to electing him.
Let me ask you about the other two women running. Do you think they're qualified to be governor? And do you have a particular problem with either of their candidacies?
You know, sir, I think that we have a lot of good candidates in this race, and whoever comes out of this primary, I will be happy to support. I certainly hope that will be Dana Walks. I think he's in the best position to beat our governor. I would also say that I expect that it will be Dana Walks. If another candidate comes through the primary, I certainly would be happy to support any of our candidates against Scott Walker in November.
Well, we're going to have a bus to take them to the debates.
Yes. We have a robust field, and I think that's a good thing. I think that, you know, I think we can build momentum by having such a robust field. We can have an active primary, and while Scott Walker, hopefully is sitting on his laurels during that primary period, our folks to be out there campaigning hard and working hard. But I mean, I think it's going to take some work. It won't be easy to win.
It's not as easy to win anymore because unions have been decimated.
Absolutely.
Voter ID, gerrymandering in legislative districts. Mm-hmm. Which leads me to my next question. There's a special election in Racine to take the place of your former colleague, who's now mayor, Corey Mason. Have you picked sides in that race?
I am supporting Greta Neubauer in that race.
You are. Well, and obviously the progressives are split in this race.
Yeah, and you know, this is, again, another race where we have two good candidates. And, you know, it really is in some ways a matter of preference. I think that Greta's got the right experience, the right mix of characteristics to be able to move us forward. She is who I would like to work with moving forward in the legislature. But certainly, her opponent is well qualified as well, and progressives are split. We have two progressive choices. And, you know, I think this is indicative of a bigger wave that we see nationally of where sentiment is at. You know, I think that Democrats are excited. Democrats want to run for office. Democrats, you know, there's one thing that Donald Trump and Scott Walker did for us. It's rile up Democrats. And, you know, I think that's a good thing. And, you know, I think that when we see the results that we saw in Virginia just a few weeks back, when we see Doug Jones' victory in Alabama, I think what we're seeing bodes well for the future here in Wisconsin as well. And I'm excited that we have folks who are ready to step up to run for office and to fill that void that we need of more progressives.
Final question. What did you think of Kirsten Gillibrand sort of opening the floodgates and having her colleagues, first the women and then quite a few men, asking Al Franken to step aside. I congratulated her. You know, I took a lot of heat on Facebook. There are a lot of Democrats that are very mad that Al Franken stepped down.
Yeah, you know, so I think that Al Franken was right to step down, and I think those who called for his resignation were absolutely right. You know, this is the Senate of the United States. These are the folks who should be setting the example, you know. I mean, I think any of us who are in elected office should be held to a high standard. There should be high expectations, and there should be no tolerance for this sort of sexual misconduct.
You know what's funny? I see reporters do this all the time, and it happened when you were on television. Was it hard for you to ask your colleague,
Josh Zepnik,
to step down, right?
Yeah, no, it wasn't hard because what he did was wrong. I mean, certainly nobody likes having these things happen. But here's
the thing. I'd like to hear this addressed from another perspective. You know, are you concerned for the safety of the people you work with?
Absolutely. I mean, that really is where it's at. This is about ensuring a safe workplace for our staff. You know, it's really simple. You know, we hire staff when we want to ensure that we can keep them safe. No woman should have to endure the kind of harassment that the women endured at their hands. And it's pretty simple.
My sister was a page at the state capitol in the late 70s. And there was there was sort of an alternative newspaper in town called Takeover. They were pretty radical. They were something. But, you know, she basically blew the whistle, among other pages, about the absolutely outrageous conduct that was going on in that building. And, of course, that was the time period where former Representative Walter Ward actually raped a woman in a elevator in that building.
Mm.
So, I mean, it was crazy. And there's some pretty famous names that were caught up in that story. But you know what? And my sister got fired. Of course, they didn't protect her.
Which is horrible.
But in that time period, you know what? The mainstream media kind of sloughed it off.
Right. Well, I think that we are at a different point in history. I think we are going to stop seeing these things being sloughed off. What I'm hopeful, though, is that we can turn the tide, and I do think we need to elect more women. I think we need to, you know, the balance of power is just tipped in such a way that men overwhelmingly fill not only the elected offices, but also, you know, staff positions in the building, you know, many of the leadership positions within partisan politics. And so I think, you know, what we need is a better balance. And I think that if we had a better balance of power, we would see fewer of these incidents. And we need to talk about them when they occur.
Well, even
and we need to have a no-tolerance policy. We can't continue to let men in power get away with us.
Well, even how we speak. I'm hardly a paragon of virtue in my past, and I had to do a lot of soul-searching.
We've done battle a few times over things you've said,
as I
seem to recall.
No, I mean, I had to do, you know, and obviously I took corrective action a while back, but, you know, I had to think about what I did.
Absolutely, and, you know, I think that it's important for those who have those who have done inappropriate things should take corrective action. I think, you know, in the case of Al Franken and in the case of my colleague Josh Zepnik, the right thing to do is to resign, because you can't continue to do this job with that hanging over you. And it impacts not only them, it impacts the institution, and it impacts their colleagues. You know, this is hanging over not only Josh in our case, but also, or Representative Zepnik, but also over our entire caucus.
Stand by. We'll talk more with Lisa Subek at SlysOffice.com.
Hi there. My name is Ishmael Ozan, and many of you know me as the Dane County District Attorney, but I am also a husband and a father of two young girls. Today, I am asking you to make the choice my wife and I made to not use physical punishment with our children. Many of us are not aware that over 16 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics urged doctors to recommend that parents not use physical punishment on their children. Today, over 100 years of research on children and families supports this recommendation. Look, well-meaning parents may use physical discipline intending to teach their children to make good choices, but we now know that physical discipline actually leads to more disobedience and aggressive behaviors in children. We all want what is best for our kids. Today, we now know what is best for kids is parenting based on respect, mutual understanding, and logic, rather than fear of physical pain. Please join me in learning more about positive parenting and creating a violence-free home.
Paid for by the Dane County District Attorney's Office with support from UW Health American Family Children's Hospital.
Welcome back to SlysOffice.com. We're talking to State Representative Lisa Subek. She, of course, is a Democrat representing Madison's West Side, far West Side, 78th Assembly District. I want to talk to you a little bit about what you have introduced. Well, we've got a nursing shortage because there's a lot of people in the healthcare industry that aren't paid appropriately. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So, you know, Wisconsin faces a shortage within our certified nursing assistants, or CNAs, as they're commonly called, as well as in personal care workers. And, I mean, we face a shortage of, I believe it's 11,500 nursing assistants currently, current vacant positions. And that's expected to grow, you know, as boomers age, as the baby boomer generation ages. We expect that the shortage will grow astronomically. And we need real solutions to this. And not too long ago, the Republicans proposed that the answer to this problem, the answer to our shortage of nursing assistants, is to simply reduce the training requirements. And to be clear, Sy, these are the folks who are on the front lines. They work under the supervision of a nurse, but they have the day-to-day contact and the moment-to-moment contact with patients. These are the folks who, you know, as our parents age, these are the folks who are providing frontline care for them.
And they're making critical decisions.
Facilities. Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, their care is a mix of medical care and personal care. You know, this is somebody who takes their vital signs, who alerts medical staff if there are concerns. This is the person who handles their nutritional needs. But this is also the person who may be changing their adult diaper, helping them with their toileting, ensuring that they have proper dental care. It's, you know, it's a whole range of services. And these are folks who in the state of Wisconsin are expected to have 120 hours of training, which is not really all that much to begin with. And 36 of those hours need to be clinical in nature. So they need to be like on the job, working under the supervision of a nurse, learning how to hands-on do the job. So what Republicans decided to do was to propose a bill that would reduce that training to 75 hours of training for these frontline workers and would cut in half the amount of their clinical training. And, you know, that's not the answer. That's a race to the bottom side. That's saying, hey, we have a shortage, so let's just reduce quality of care. And that is not, A, that's not going to work to fill the vacant positions. And, B, even if it worked, it would have the incredibly negative effect of driving down the quality of care that people receive. So my colleague Jonathan Brostoff and I got together and said, we need a better answer to this. This is not the answer. We can't afford a race to the bottom. Let's figure out how we improve quality while recruiting the staff that we need. Well, first things first, Sly, you know, these folks, the median starting wage for these folks is $10.25 an hour.
Outrageous.
Outrageous. People can make $1.75 more on average going to work in other unskilled fields where they don't need any training at all. So reducing the training requirements here isn't going to solve the problem. It is pretty clear that we need to increase pay so we can recruit and retain these frontline workers. So first of all, the bills that we introduced, first one increases pay. The other two, recognizing that the training can be hard to access. The problem isn't the amount of training they need, but sometimes people don't have access to it. They live in a place where the, you know, courses aren't offered, or they're not offered at the right time, or they can't afford them. So we also put our CNA Pay Act as a package of three bills. One actually increases wages for frontline caretakers. The second one increases access to education by giving grants to technical colleges to offer the courses in underserved areas, either for free or at an affordable cost.
Well, yeah, but if you were to talk to your colleague from Superior, where there's wide stretches of distance, you know, in rural Wisconsin, you know, up in northwest Wisconsin, I bet this is a big problem.
Yes, the shortage is worse in rural areas, which is exactly why we recognize that, okay, let's figure out how we get the course offered in areas where people, you know, don't necessarily have access to the training they need. Third piece of our bills, the third bill actually creates a tax credit, and unlike Governor Walker and the Republicans who like to give tax credits to wealthy people. We would offer a tax credit to cover the cost of tuition for individuals who are entering the field, who are becoming nursing assistants. And so it would be a modest tax credit that just helps offset the cost of the training that they need to get to enter the field. And, you know, our package would take steps toward filling the shortage here without driving down quality of care. Instead, we would look to increase quality and increase quality of lives of these workers. I mean, think about this, right? We have people who are on the front lines caring for our parents or our grandparents every day, doing the hard work of taking care of them. And then they go home and they can't take care of their own family because they make $10.25 an hour. It's a poverty wage, you know? That's insulting. We need to recognize that these are folks who are working hard, and we need to compensate them accordingly.
I want to ask you before we go about your legislation, making sure that people that work for these terrible ride-sharing companies like Uber and Lyft aren't a danger to society. Explain.
Sure. So I have a bill out that is in response to the sexual assault last weekend in the city of Madison of somebody whose Uber driver drove her home, parked in front of her home and sexually assaulted her. We've had a handful of these incidents. We've also seen incidents elsewhere in the state of Uber drivers being arrested for drug charges or driving under the influence with passengers in their vehicles. We've seen robberies involving Uber drivers robbing passengers here in the city of Madison and elsewhere. And I think that, you know, we need to put an end to this. In one of the most egregious incidents, we actually saw an Uber driver sexually assault a woman here in Madison, and when the police tried to get information about the driver's identity, Uber refused to provide it without a subpoena or a warrant. And as a result, Madison police were not able to get the name of this Uber driver until after he had had time to flee the country. And so, you know, what my bill does is I propose to solve this by allowing local police departments or local units of government, whether it's the county or the city, to license these drivers. That way, each driver gets, you know, a background check at the local level, and the local government or the local police department knows who these drivers are. It's a pretty simple and common sense solution to what is clearly becoming a serious problem with these rideshare companies. And, you know, we've seen it here in Madison, but we have seen it elsewhere in the state, too. And, you know, if we return that authority to local government, no local city or town or village or county has to license their drivers, but it would give them the option. So if the problems are occurring in your community, you have the option to do that. If not, you don't have to. And, you know, it's pretty common sense. It returns a little bit of local control to our local governments, but most importantly, it enables our local law enforcement to keep our communities safe.
We've seen communities begin to stand up to Uber. As a matter of fact, they've been banned in some places. Do you think that there's a growing backlash? Obviously, you know, in modern culture, but I heard a reporter on Channel 15 a couple weeks ago use Uber as a verb. Like there is really no other choice other than using Uber. Like it's just I'm going to Uber my way home. In some respects, Uber has almost become ubiquitous.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, in my mind, Uber is really the Walmart of paid ride industry, whether it's, you know, the taxi industry, the limo industry, whatever. Uber is really sort of the Walmart of it. You know, they run over everyone else. They have this big multinational presence. They don't want to follow the rules of local cities and towns. And they take advantage of their drivers. And really, I mean, you know, it's a horrific employment model. There's so many things that are wrong with the model that these ride-sharing companies use. That said, you know, my proposal addresses a problem that we have here and now. I believe there are bigger issues that we need to deal with these ride-sharing companies. But first and foremost, we should be able to keep people safe. And I think that the danger that these companies pose, because there are no local licensing requirements for their drivers, is real. And it's persistent, and it's something that we need to address right away. So that's why my bill tackles that one piece of it right now.
Finally, are you hopeful, 2018, that with new leadership, Gordon Hinds is the minority leader, that there will be a more competitive slate of people running, holding the flag for Democrats?
Yeah, I'm really hopeful. So, I mean, I look at what's happening with the governor's office and all of the enthusiasm of folks running there. I see our own recruiting efforts for legislative offices, and I see that we are recruiting some really impressive folks to run for seats across the state, particularly in some swing areas where I think we have a real chance to pick up seats. I also see what's trending nationally, and I see the big victories in Virginia for Democrats. I see Democrats winning in Alabama in the Senate race, special election. And I think that, you know, it all gives me great hope for the upcoming election here in Wisconsin. You know, we still face challenges, but the enthusiasm and the excitement of Democrats, I think, bodes well for our future. I also think, you know, the reality is we have to remember that Governor Scott Walker and most of the Republicans in office here in Wisconsin align themselves with Donald Trump and Donald Trump's policies. And people are fed up with that. You know, it didn't take long for people to go from having voted for him to being fed up with it. We see a story on the news every other week about, you know, somebody in rural Wisconsin or in another state who was a Trump voter who is now saying, he didn't give me what he promised. And those folks should come back and vote for Democrats in the upcoming election. I think we could have, you know, a great year for Democrats, but also a great year for the people of our state.
Lisa Zubek, thanks for coming to SlySoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Thank you for having me, Sly.
SlySoffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day in mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.